This is the Court Leader's Advantage, a podcast series for court professionals and by court professionals, brought to you by thecourtleader.net and in cooperation with NACOM, the National Association for Court Management. It may have started with the advent of no-fault divorce in the 1970s, but the number of litigants representing themselves in court has regularly increased year after year. This fact has presented a challenge for the community and for courts. People pursuing a legal matter in court and who have limited legal experience are at a decided disadvantage. They are at greater risk of ending up with an unfortunate or maybe even disastrous outcome. Likewise, unschooled, self-represented litigants in a courtroom can be time-consuming and lead to uncomfortable situations for litigants, judges, and court staff. As a result, many courts around the country have created centers to assist self-represented litigants in pursuing their cases and appearing in court. The presence of court self-service centers is a mixed bag. Not all courts have them, and the centers themselves can range from the very modest to the very extensive. I'm Pete Kiefer, and welcome to the Court Leader's Advantage podcast series. This month, we're going to look at court self-service centers. What do the varieties of centers look like? Are the costs of running them worth the benefits? What are the criticisms of centers, and what is the response? And finally, what advice do our panelists have for courts considering starting a center and for those that already have one? Here to discuss these questions are Angela Polk, supervisor of the Legal Resource Center for the Multnomah County Circuit Court in Portland, Oregon; Christy Cox, Chief Deputy County Clerk for the 44th Circuit Court in Howe, Michigan; Salvador Reynoso, Managing Attorney for the Self-Help Services Unit of the Superior Court in San Bernardino, California; and Robert Southers, Managing Attorney for the Self-Help and Dispute Resolution Department of the Franklin County Municipal Court in Columbus, Ohio. Thank you all for joining today's podcast. Let's start off by having you describe your court self-service operation. Angela Polk?
Here in Multnomah County, we are the newest department in our court, having opened in January of 2020. Then, hello, COVID shut us down like the rest of the world, and we quickly pivoted to doing a lot of things just online and virtually to you know, protect people's health. Since January of 2022, we've been open in our brand new 17-story courthouse to the public every day, helping people with case types of family law mostly, but we're seeing a lot of landlord-tenant matters, some small claims, some general civil debt collection, and a very little bit of probate, specifically dealing with minor guardianships. We're actually seeing between 800 and about 1,100 people a month for a variety of things, including intakes and sit-down facilitation, help with filling out court work, giving procedural information about hearings that need to be attended, and acting as the quasi-law library by providing a place to do legal research and do printing.
Christy Cox?
We don't offer a self-help center per se. We do offer packets of forms that are approved by the State Court Administrator's Office, and we organize those by the type of filings being sought. These are available in our lobby and also as a fillable PDF on our website. Additionally, we can refer our customers to various legal help organizations for further assistance. We work closely with those organizations to assure that they have the current forms that our court is using, as many copies as we need, and what our filing fees are. Our form bank covers domestic filings, some criminal, some name changes, personal protection orders, red flag law orders, and some general civil forms.
Salvador Reynoso?
In San Bernardino County, we are part of the long history of self-help services in the state of California. I think we're fortunate here in California to kind of lead the way in terms of self-help. Our particular program has been in existence for well over 15 years. And so San Bernardino is the largest county in California and in the United States. And so with that comes a lot of challenges geographically and in terms of meeting the diverse needs of our population. We have a lot of different languages here. We have a huge number of tribal communities. And so there's just a huge need for our services. And so just to give you an idea of sort of the scale, last year we assisted well over 60,000 litigants, and we're on pace to beat that this year. So we average well over 5,000 instances of service per month at our five locations throughout the county. So we have self-help centers in, you know, densely populated urban sprawls and in remote desert and mountain communities. And so it's our goal to basically, you know, meet the needs of the public wherever they're found. So we have a rather large team. We have a team of about 33 individuals, six attorneys, five supervising paralegals, and 22 frontline staff paralegals who are very passionate and competent about what they do. And we provide services in the area of landlord-tenant, governmental child support, small claims. We do that on a one-on-one basis, in person, by appointment, and also virtually online through an online portal.
Robbie Southers?
Our self-help operation is a walk-in service. People can come into our office and get help from an attorney. We also have a web chat online for people that aren't able to come in person. On top of our typical attorney assistance with giving legal information, we also have a social worker that works at eviction court, as well as navigators who assist people with all the different resources related to eviction. So we have kind of a wide range of services, really depending on the case type someone has and their specific need.
What are the benefits of running a self-service operation? And is it worth the cost? And how do you know? Sal?
Obviously, I've been in self-help for personally myself for about 15 years. And so I have countless stories that I can share with regards to, you know, the one-on-one personal contacts and the individuals who share how life-changing the assistance we provided has been. And also, you know, the judicial officers who, if for some reason, you know, they send someone to self-help, and if we weren't available for services, they're like, what's going on? They really value our services. But more than that, the benefits clearly are self-help is a great caseflow management. We know that it increases efficiencies in the court. Here in California in 2019, actually 2021, I believe, there was a report that was prepared trying to advocate the need for augmentation for our budget. And it was an extensive study, and it came to find that self-help services save the court well over $10 million just in operations. And so as a result of that study, there was a $19 million augmentation to the state self-help programs. And there was approximately, with that augmentation, an additional million people statewide were able to be assisted through our programs. So we know that people get to judgment significantly quicker than represented folks. I had done one study myself in one court that I was at. ProPERS got to judgment 6 months sooner, because we're just in the business of getting people through the process rather than litigating and trying to nickel and dime a case. We know that the people, litigants are far more prepared, and so they're able to communicate to the judicial officers much clearer. We know that people understand their orders. We know that actually people prepare their findings after hearing intentions, actually going through court. We know that there's a reduction in rejections of documents. We know that there's a reduction in continuances. So all of these things basically, you know, have become apparent both anecdotally and through studies both by the California Judicial Council and the National Center for State Courts.
Robbie?
I think there's a lot of benefits. When our self-help center was created, our judges gave us three prongs to our mission. The first one being improving access to justice, which is not as tangible as some of the other benefits, but at the time, Ohio was 47th in the country for access to justice. Most people just had unmet legal needs in every type of case. So the goal of creating the self-help center was to give people another resource to access legal information and get the help they need. The second part of our prong was to improve court efficiency. We've seen that happen in a couple of different ways. An anecdote that I always like to share is before we were created, there was a litigant that would always come down to our clerk's office, and he filed everything on McDonald's napkins. As you can imagine, that gummed up the process quite a bit. He wasn't really achieving what he was looking to achieve. It took a lot of clerk and court staff time to figure out what he was filing and what to do with it. It just wasn't working for anyone. Now that the self-help center exists, an individual like that can be sent up here and say, you can file that napkin if you'd like, but why don't you go visit the self-help center, get a little bit of legal information, maybe get a form that works correctly, get some additional help that's not just that napkin. Additionally, one of the services we provide is with criminal record sealing and expungement. We did a study a few years ago and found that if every person that we assisted that we gave other resources to that were otherwise ineligible to seal their record filed anyway, it would have cost the clerk about $20,000 extra in that year. So those people are sent to our office. We help them figure out if they're eligible or not. If they're not, we get them connected with our social worker for resources on jobs and housing and other needs that they might have, and give them other options than filing a record sealing application that's ineligible, that's going to cost them a filing fee, and it's just going to take more staff time to process when it's not going to actually be successful.
Many people are opposed to court self-service centers. Their argument is that courts should not become de facto law schools. How do you respond to this criticism? Christy?
I can appreciate both sides of the argument. Currently in Michigan, we're permitted to provide assistance without dispensing legal advice. So we guide our customers through the documents and the forms that are needed to complete what they need to do without assessing the validity of the claim, their path forward, or the probable outcome. On the other hand, an on-site person to provide the legal advice could be of great help. We had a gentleman who came in a few weeks ago. He was seeking to restore his firearm rights. He did all of the paperwork that he needed to do that in the civil case. Unfortunately, he did not know that he also needed to expunge the criminal cases. So ultimately, he was not successful and very frustrated. Whichever direction a court takes, it's important that the court and the clerk's office always maintain a neutral stance. And it's going to be interesting when Livingston County does start a self-help center at some point in the future. It'll be very interesting to find out how they handle what could be perceived as putting a thumb on the scale for one side or the other.
Sal?
Again, I agree that courts and court-based self-help programs, or legal educations, self-help centers serve a completely different purpose. We provide just a practical procedural assistance, not comprehensive legal advice. We are to remain neutrals. Our goal is really to bridge the gap between legal complexities and individual needs. So we're not aiming to replace law schools, nor would we ever be, have the capacity to do so. But I think that we do share with law schools the commitment to access to justice. And I think when we can agree on that, then what it allows us to do is find opportunities for collaboration where we lack the resources. So, working on joint legal clinics where we might lack resources, capacity, or subject matter expertise. So, like I said, I have these gray hairs for a reason. I've been in self-help for quite some time, and it really has come a long way, the perception of what self-help does, what it should do, and what it doesn't. And initially, in areas or jurisdictions where self-help centers are new, sometimes there's sort of a potential conflict between, some of the players out there. But ultimately, after over almost going on 20 years of self-help in California, those criticisms are gone. We really work collaboratively with our local law schools, looking to recruit interns for our internships, local paralegal schools, and also recruiting members of the private bar to assist. So yeah, I think with time, I think that there's no longer criticism, but an acceptance and partnerships.
What are the most common requests from litigants? And what is the most common request that courts cannot answer or fulfill? Angela?
We typically get self-represented litigants who are coming in looking for attorneys. None of our staff in our legal resource center are practicing attorneys. So we build relationships with a lot of the community-based legal organizations that are able to provide referrals. So when people come in and they're asking specifically for what strategy should I use to get everything I'm entitled to in my divorce filing, we don't do that. And we are not in a position to, as the other panelists have noted, we are the court, so we're neutral. We're not taking a side one way or the other, but what we are doing is providing access to information so that they can get those questions answered. The strategy question is really one of the most frequent ones we get, and also how to divide property in a divorce filing dealing with custody. Those are our heavy hitters. We get them all the time.
Robbie?
So our most common request, about 65% of the services we provide are eviction and housing related. That's really gone up quite a bit since the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, our main source of services were record sealing and expungement. That's now moved down to our number two spot. Frankly, even when we talk to people about wanting to seal and expunge their record, a lot of times lately that has been so that they can find better housing. So I think the pandemic's really changed a lot of the legal landscape and put a lot of people's focus on either keeping their housing, finding new housing, or otherwise avoiding legal issues with their housing. Cases that we can't necessarily help with, we have a lot of people come in that maybe need help with a divorce that we're sending to another help center, or maybe have a common pleas question that we're not able to help with. We also, just because our help center is so busy, we have a lot of people that come in that just don't really have a legal question at all, but don't really know where to start. So we've trained our staff with social service resources that even if we can't provide a legal answer, we're making sure we send someone to the right place, they can get the right answer for what they need.
Artificial intelligence appears to offer the potential for assistance that is tailored down to the individual litigant. Is AI something that your court would consider in the future? Sal?
Absolutely. Becoming the court of tomorrow and delivering service, the right services everywhere is right in alignment with our court strategic plan. And so I think AI, leveraging AI is definitely a tool to help us meet that strategic goal. We're not quite there yet. Obviously, the technology is new, but in terms of self-help, we are definitely not weary of using new technology. Despite the increases in funding, we don't have all the resources that we need to be able to meet, the demands of the public. And so leveraging AI in the future, I can definitely see the advantage of perhaps AI-informed chatbots, right? I could see perhaps using AI for regular audits of information on our website and, accuracy of our legal information that we provide and handouts or updating automated updates of form packets on an annual basis as those change. So leveraging AI to do those tasks so that our folks can do what AI, I think, will never be able to do, which is give compassion, that heartworm assistance to a litigant in need.
Robbie?
That's something that our office has talked about internally. We haven't come to a full decision yet, nor have we approached our judges with any kind of proposal. I think there's a lot of potential with AI. I think there's a lot of benefits that could come from it. But I think, at least as of where it is right now, it does still need to be overseen by a person. There needs to be someone kind of checking what the AI is telling people, because there's also a lot of harm, especially to litigants that don't have the legal background that you or I may have, that there need to be some safeguards around it and not just let loose on its own.
What are your court's next steps in the development of your self-service center? Christy?
We're an operational arm of the county clerk within the executive branch of government. So we'll just await the judicial branch to create our path forward here in our court. And until then, we'll continue to provide the best service we can without providing legal advice.
Robbie?
Sure. So our court, just a couple of years ago, combined our self-help center with our mediation department. This kind of allowed one office with one overseeing manager to make sure that mediations that were referred by judges were done efficiently and that the self-help center was able to grow and add that service. So we're looking in the future of continuing that partnership, making sure that people in mediation, especially those that are self-represented, have access to the information the self-help center has, and that continues to grow and give another resource for improved access to justice. Additionally, we're working on continuing our outreach to the community. We do large record sealing events twice a year where we bring people to a more friendly location and get them access to that important service. We're looking to do two per year. Our goal for the next one in the fall is to serve 1,000 people. So we're really hoping to get something exciting off the ground there.
What advice do you have for courts that want to start a center? And what advice do you have for courts that already have had a center for a while? Angela?
That is a really great question. And I think the way we come at it from the Multnomah County perspective is building relationships with our community partners. That building of relationships is kind of the starting point for everything that we want to do, whether it's providing information that, hey, we're here and we have this service available, or it is the, we don't actually handle that part of what you need, but this partner that we work with can probably help you solve the problem that you have. So building and maintaining those relationships with the community-based legal organizations like Legal Aid or some of the pro bono or low cost or even some of the unbundled nonprofit-ish, if they're not actually nonprofit firms, that can help provide some of the legal advice and or representation, some of the community-based organizations that help provide rental assistance for a tenant who's facing eviction but doesn't know where to go for help maintaining the relationships with organizations that can provide access to and more understanding of some of the government services that might be available to help someone get through a situation. It's that relationship building and maintenance that is so important, whether you're trying to start a self-help center or whether you have an established one, because circumstances and laws and situations change so quickly. Being able to have a pretty deep toolkit helps and can only continue to help as we move forward.
Sal?
And definitely echo, Angela. You definitely have to create those relationships with your community partners. It's extremely important. We definitely heavily rely on our legal partners here in San Bernardino, and I think that will be applicable wherever you're starting a self-help center. I would also strongly encourage that you develop internal relationships right off the bat, and for lack of a better term, to operationalize self-help. And by that, I've worked in several large courts over the years, and initially, when self-help first started, it was looked at as, oh, it's a nice thing to have. It's a nice sort of little social service that we offer. But over the years, self-help has actually been deemed by rule of court the core function of the court. And so, I think that you need to take your seat at the table. You need to get a commitment from court leadership when you're going to start that process. You definitely need to get to know your PJ. You need to know your CEO, as well as build relationships with those responsible for your technology and your CIO and your facilities, because it's extremely important that you make sure that you get off on the right start and that you don't outgrow your program and it's limited by the space that you're provided or the tools that you're given. So definitely also, I would meet regularly with your district managers. That's something that I do. Meet with your supervising judges on a regular basis, calendar that. One of the things that I've done over the years is actually made a tour of the self-help center part of judicial onboarding. So you get to build those relationships. And then they, from day one, they actually get to hear directly from you what it is that you do and what you don't do, because it can take forever to build a reputation. Right, an instance to basically ruin that. So you want to make sure that they hear directly from you what it is that you do, so that in the future, if they do refer someone to you for the wrong thing, they understand why they were turned away and you don't lose the program. So, and I know this might, the last 2 points that I'll make is, and this might sound, hire the right people, and self-help is not easy and it's not for everyone. And burnout is, and compassion fatigue is a real thing. And so you really have to hire people who are committed to access to justice, who really believe in the mission. And along with that, that's why I think it's really important. It might be cliche, but I think in self-help, building an actual or writing, including your team and writing of a mission statement and core values that you can continue to look towards and sort of be that guiding light, which reminds you of why you're there. And also for it to be obviously in alignment with the court's strategic plan. So I think it helps you stay on course.
Robbie?
I really enjoy talking to courts that are looking to start a self-help center. We've helped people in Virginia and Oklahoma and a couple other states with their help centers. And the advice I always give them right as we start is just not to be afraid to start with something small. Our help center actually opened in 2016 back in a completely other building. We weren't even inside the court building. And we were serving only one or two people a day, but it gave us a place to grow, to really start to figure out what exactly would work for our court. We've grown over time. We now serve 30,000 people a year, and it just takes some time to grow and build into that. I've talked to help centers that clean out a broom closet and they just have some forms on the wall in there. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think that's a great place to start. I think it's a great resource to at least get something going. As people see the help center and as people start to use it, it'll grow. There'll be opportunities to expand. So, the biggest piece of advice for anyone would just be not to let perfect be the enemy of good and get something off the ground and started. For those help centers that have been around a little longer, anyone that I talk to really just keep looking for opportunities for partnership, for growth, for expansion. Listen to the litigants in your court, figure out what the needs are and what those unmet or maybe needs that they don't even know exist, and find out ways to serve those groups of people.
I want to thank Angela Polk, Christy Cox, Robbie Southers, and Salvador Reynoso for their thoughts and ideas on managing court self-help service centers. This may be an established concept, but there is still plenty to talk about. As always, my thanks to you court professionals tuning into today's episode. Helping self-represented litigants or helping seasoned attorneys, you tackle every transaction with a professional demeanor. Thank you. Join us on Tuesday, May 21st, for another episode dealing with the issues facing our courts. This has been the Court Leaders Advantage podcast series. I'm Pete Kiefer, and thanks for joining us today. Thanks for joining us today. The Court Leaders Advantage is a regular podcast on courts and court administration. Today's episode will be available on our website, on YouTube, on Facebook, on iTunes, on LinkedIn, and on Twitter. Become part of the conversation. If you have questions, comments, or ideas for future episodes, email us. Our address is clapodcast, that's all one word, at nacomnet.org. Did you hear an interesting comment by one of the panelists that you would like to listen to again, but you don't want to search through the entire episode to find it? The additional resources section of the webpage contains a question time marker sheet. Just find the discussion question on the sheet, and next to it is the time that question was asked. You can then quickly fast forward to that time in the episode and listen to the panelists' comments. Remember, if you don't have time to watch an episode, you can always listen to the audio version. Listen in your car or on the bus on your way to or from work. You never have to miss an episode. I'm Pete Kiefer, and on behalf of our guests, the Court Leader website, and the National Association for Court Management, thank you and have a great day. The views, information, and opinions expressed during this episode are solely those of the host and the individual presenters. They do not necessarily represent the position of the National Association for Court Management.